The exhibit's called Clifford Still, the Colville Reservation and Beyond 1934 to 1939. And the Nez Pelham Art Colony was about getting students, bringing students down and capturing what they saw was a dying culture, essentially. So capturing, and we see in the book beautiful color pictures of the different portraits of Native American people, and you know, it's just stunning. I mean, the work.
None of Still's portraits are in there.
None of Still's portraits are in there, but his influence on the students is like, especially that page on page 27, or Ruth Kelsey. I go in here, and I think I'd really like to see her work, and yet the abstractions that they did don't seem to be as accessible as some of the other things. And yet, from reading this book, I look at the abstractions and think they're the most interesting things that they were doing there. And yet, maybe they felt at a time this was, maybe they felt the commercial pressure. Can you speak to some of that?
Well, time travel to the late 1930s, and this is, the heyday of American scene painting, and this is what you did. I mean, it's not that people didn't also look into abstraction or weren't interested or maybe worked in an abstract vein, but, all over the country, everywhere, in every corner, the practice is dominated by variations on American scene painting and whatever that meant, and whatever your attitude was about what America is and what sort of scene you wanted to, whether if you were obviously politically in one corner, you tended to paint certain kinds of subjects, and if you were in another political corner, other kinds of. So this is all part of, I think, American scene painting in general. And, this is they did think of both, certainly Worth Griffin, when he promoted the program, thought about, this corner as being, this unique slice of American culture. Yes, it was it's vanishing. As sympathetic as they were still, couldn't escape the kind of colonial attitudes of their period. They were looking for pure native types and very unhappy about, intermarriages and losses of language and so on. And there was also in part of the vision for setting up this colony was to make it one of these outposts, like artist colonies in different parts of the country. Grant Wood's colony in Iowa being, certainly the most well-known, but also in Santa Fe and different parts of the country, and sort of a center for that would attract artists from different places and in a way develop a very distinctive form of regional practice. So, they had the hope that, or they at least the idea that this might be the center post for a whole kind of like inland empire
aesthetic.
Or body of regional practice. And so I think that's the reason why certainly it's interesting that, they don't talk about so much native people when they talk about what people are going to go there to paint. They talk about native material. The people were part of the material context there.
A manifestation of that colonialist thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
dehumanizing.
Well, I mean, we would certainly...
We would
raise our eyebrows now.
Right. But this is 2015, not 1937.
Right. And again, I think that both Griffin and Still and the students were very...
Respectful
and sympathetic, and their portraits are respectful and sympathetic. Yeah. That was the sort of core vision. And so it's not surprising then to find that, that students focused on landscape and portraiture while they were there.
What do you think some of that work that the students did that was more abstract, that it's in somebody's attic somewhere, isn't it?
Well, yeah, probably. You have to be a kind of Clifford Still to think about managing and archiving and, keeping records for all these things. And, there are a number of students who were there who went on to teach in colleges in Washington and were... certainly very, solid professional people, but we don't have much of their work left. Or, again, they're not in accessible places.
I'm thinking of people like Glenn West, who was a student there who did his master's thesis about this experience.
Yeah, right.
Did you have access to that?
Yes.
Yeah, what was that like?
Well, it's not very exciting, actually. I mean, it's very oh, gee, it's very academic. I mean, he describes, you know, he says, you know, that he's looking for, well, first of all, there's a section on just sort of technique and the mechanics of creating portraiture and so on. But then he, you know, he talks about the different kinds of tribal groups that were there and what their general appearance was and people who were good specimens of a particular type, you know. And that's one reason why, you know, why he would pick those people as a subject of a painting. And, you know, there's a little bit of history. I mean, they were definitely, they're not just types, they're also individual examples of that particular type. And so there's a little, I mean, everybody's named, and there's a little bit of family history. And in fact, that's what Griffin's histories of these people are like, too. I mean, he's very, he does a little family history for each of the people that he portrays that are at least in the Washington State Museum collection now. And they were very interested in, you know, people who were related to famous chiefs and battles and, you know, the kind of Wild West history that they were involved with.
And Chief Joseph, whose presence must infiltrate every aspect of life there.
Well, not necycessarily, because the Nez Perce were only one of the tribes there.
Oh, that's
there.
Right. There were several tribes. Yakima.
There were 12 tribes. And there still are.
Wow.
And the Nez Perce people were interlopers. They were traditional enemies of these people, and they got pushed into this reservation space by the government. And so, yeah, I mean, there is definitely a Nez Perce culture, and there's a Nez Perce cemetery where, you know, Chief Joseph was buried in Espelum, but, you know, it's the Nez Perce. There's also an Awi seminar. I mean, it's a cemetery, you know, nearby. They're not buried together.
Yeah.
And so on. So, and, you know, Joseph is gone, and what, he dies in 1905, maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, pretty early on. Certainly, you know, his particular group of people and his particular followers were and, you know, remain important players in the history of the tribe and so on. But, you know, they're only...
One-twelfth.
They're only one part of the mix.
Right. Yeah.
And they weren't actually the people who were on this land originally.
Right. They're more of an Idaho-based...
Well, they're, you know, they have a... They have... Now, here's where, you know, my lack of expertise shows up, but... You know, basically, if you go to Joseph, Oregon, you know, that's where they kind of ended up after being chased out of other territories. And
by the U.S. military.
Right. And Joseph always wanted to reestablish their headquarters kind of there. And he could never, they wouldn't let him ever go back to Joseph. So there's always this business about, can we move Joseph's grave back to Joseph? Anyway, so it's a very complicated mixture of histories and, I mean, the Colville Reservation is a strange place because they just sort of, you know, took a bunch of people who didn't necessarily belong there with people who did belong there and said, okay, you're all... That's where you're going to be now.